on this episode of Autographs.
And to do that, not out of obligation or debt or shame or penance or making amends, but boy, this was an amazing thing. Like, where, how come nobody told me how great this was?
Originality.
Origin. My name is Nick Singh.
Ew.
Welcome to Autographs. My name is Nick Singh. And just know, originality is on the horizon. Let's go.
Well, you listen, you got to have that booth for those one-of-a-kind Scott Harrison voiceovers. But listen, I'll say this, Scott. I'm really honored to have you on the show. I don't just mean that to placate you or to say kind words or anything like that. I about 2 years ago, I saw this documentary that touched my heart. It was this water documentary Unexplained on Netflix, and it explained the water crisis, but it actually had a spin on it, and it kind of turned it back toward actual more first world countries, and it yep. really got me thinking, and it changed my life. And funnily enough, you know, when God loved the universe, I know you're spiritual, as am I believe in God, and it just kind of aligns you down this path. So I just said, screw this, I'm going to figure out a way to bring clean water to the world. This is insane. God put all this water around these incredible continents from India and Africa. It's a shame that we can't just tap it. And I learned so much about desalination and water and ocean plastic and all this stuff. And I learned about some rhyme and reason, and I'll ask you about some of it today. And then I kind of got, I'm 25, so I had to put that stuff down for a little bit. And I would say reason took it over. But right in the midst of that was charity water. And the moment I found what you were doing, I think you get this compliment more often than many, and you and your team deserve it. But I was touched at the core of my heart. I found these folks who I felt, these people get it. You know, out of these other water charities, these folks are terrific, but they're not branding it toward myself or anybody else. And immediately I actually looked online to see if there's any jobs 2.5 years ago. I was like, I want to come work for these guys. These guys are brilliant. And I often get to interview some cool people, from billionaires and millionaires, all these cool founders and all this stuff. You know how it is, YouTubers. And that's been cool for me, because a lot of them have been heroes of mine. But I can't express this enough, man. You're at one of the tops of my list so far as people that I've always wanted to talk to. So I just thank you from the bottom of my heart for making some time for this, man. I know you're busy.
That's so kind. That's so kind, man. It's an honor to be here. I'm excited for the conversation.
Thank you, man. I look forward to it. So I always started out like this. Actually, I don't always do, but I think you'd appreciate this. What is something you're grateful for and why? And I'll kick it off. I always like to choose something a little bit more unique and then explain why. Man, I'm grateful for this MacBook right now. Funnily enough, I am I'm using an old MacBook that my mom got me. I come from a single parent family, and I know that she did a lot to get this for me many years ago when I was going to school. And it still works. I got to get a new one soon, and I'm in the market for a new one, but I'm quite grateful for it. It's a gift, and I appreciate it. How about you?
Very cool. I'm grateful for gratitude. You know, I love that you started off this way. This is something I've been trying to do with my kids every night before bed. I've got a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old, and you know, sometimes I kind of crash in the middle of our king size bed, and my wife's working or downstairs having a little alone time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll rock out, you know, the kids, before they get the story, they need to do 10 things that they're grateful for that day, and they can't steal each other's.
Wow.
So it's 20 unique things. And the other night, my son hit 10 and he just kept going. And I stopped him in the 20s. And it was just so exciting. And it just, you know, it changes your whole positioning towards life, the act of practicing gratitude. So I'm a big fan of that. And it's not always easy. And, you know, I can be as grumpy as the next guy and as irritable as the next guy. But I do find that this, you know, this practice really helps focus you on what's more important. And it's a great thing to teach our kids.
I love that, man. I felt that. That's beautiful. I can't believe you're getting your kids to do that. That's amazing, man.
That's also a good way to run down the day, you know, and then sometimes I'll help them, you know, old, what did you do? Where'd you guys go when we jumped in the car? Oh yeah. You know?
Yeah, absolutely, man. You turned towards some of the magic moments of the day. That's beautiful. Wow. I love that. Wow. Okay, cool. Yeah. I'm glad that we did that gratitude session. Thank you. Thanks for doing that with me.
Of course.
But yeah, you know, Scott, something I wanted to run by you is I've grown up and I've gone to a lot of really beautiful events and conferences, and all of them point back at this one statement that the secret to living is giving. And I think that you embody that wholesomely. Now, my question for you is, have you ever seen the show Boy Meets World? I know it's a bit of a corny question. Have you ever seen that?
I haven't, but that's just because I haven't seen anything.
Oh, you haven't?
You know, my wife and I were just talking, lamenting our lost TV and movie days, just having really hyper animated kids. And, you know, me trying to run a $100 million a year organization and her starting a new business. We're so tired by the time, you know, 8:39 comes around that's it.
Yeah. No,
and then we're up early, you know, preparing for the day or making school lunches and all that stuff. So in my previous pre-COVID life, I'm an avid movie guy and I would watch movies on the road. So I'd get stuck in Orlando on a layover because of weather, and I'll go see three movies back to back, you know, at the Megaplex.
Wow.
I saw, what was it? I saw, maybe it was the last Star Wars or Batman. Like I was, in Indianapolis for a speech, and I just carved out an extra 3 hours to go to the IMAX at like 2 PM. I think there were four other people in the theater. So now with that gone, I'm not getting any content, movies or TV. And I miss it.
I miss it too, man. Yeah, I'm a huge movie goer. It's like my escape. So it's cool to know we share that. And the reason I brought up, I mean, it's this old show. It's from the 90s. It's a kid show. I'm reliving my childhood. Anyways, there's this really beautiful park, and I'll summarize it quick. It's like Mr. Feeney, this old teacher, comes next door to Alan, and Alan's this grocer, and he's having a midlife crisis. He's like, "Ah, I hate what I do. I settled. I became a grocer, and not there's anything wrong with being a grocer." And then he looks at Feeney, he goes, "Feeney, don't you hate what you do? You've been teaching for this many years." And Mr. Feeney goes, "Oh God, no, Alan, I haven't." Alan's like, "Oh, it's easy for you. You impact all these kids, change their lives." And Mr. Feeney goes, "You know, it'd be easy for me to say that what I do just changes people's lives and I do it for the kids. And I do, but the truth is that, you know, I teach because I enjoy it." And that felt profound to me. It felt like that was lost in the culture and the conversation of go out, whatever you do, ensure that it has impact. I'm curious to know what's actually at the heart of everything that you do, Scott. Is it enjoyment or is it impact? And I'm not saying that they can't be together, but I'm curious, does one precede the other for you and really make it special?
I mean, you know, I would say at the core of my work or my personal work has been, spirituality. I mean, for anybody that might know my story, you know, I was raised in a very conservative Christian home. My mom was an invalid growing up. So I was a good kid in a caregiver role who played, you know, piano in church every Sunday morning. And then I rebelled like crazy, 10 years of sex and drugs and pornography and gambling and just all of the debauchery that came with a career I'd embarked into as a nightclub promoter. So I ran parties at 40 different nightclubs over 10 years and just hated my life when I got to the end of that decade of rebellion, I guess. And then I really came back to a lost faith, a lost morality in a much more authentic way as a 28-year-old adult, having been through so many of these experiences. And you know, that's kind of where it starts. And, you know, and as I rediscovered the teachings of Jesus and a lot of the, you know, the stuff, again, that I maybe heard in Sunday school, I was so compelled by the idea of service. You know, there was this verse in the book of James that said, true religion is to look after widows and orphans in their distress, number one. Number two, to keep yourself from being polluted by the world. And at the time, I was 0-2. I mean, I was, I had done nothing for anyone that would be considered a widow or orphan or a person in need. And not only was I polluted others for a lifetime. That was my lifestyle or my profession even, was just getting people wasted in our clubs, getting them to spend as much money on champagne or vodka as possible. So, you know, I had a life transformation at 28, effectively starting life over, acting out a little bit of the prodigal son story, maybe. So that's been at the core of you know, my personal mission of bringing clean and safe drinking water to everybody on the planet. That said, Charity Water is a completely agnostic organization. So I get to live out my faith every day by what I do. But the organization, I mean, our biggest donors, you know, are staunch atheists who think what I would do on a Sunday is just absolute lunacy, but have given $20 million, you know, to clean water. And, you know, we've had Muslim school kids during Ramadan send in $65,000 from the Emirates, you know, money that they've collected. So what I really wanted to do was build a very big tent and have an organization where all we needed to agree on was that human beings needed clean and safe drinking water to thrive. And, you know, regardless of your politics or your religious views, we could come together and believe in service. We could believe in generosity and compassion and care for others. So, you know, my personal animation is would, you know, my personal mission would look different than the organization's mission, but I get to kind of live out my personal values and faith through the work. That makes sense.
Wow, that was profound. I agree, and I see that actually. It's beautiful. I think that for folks listening, because I have some friends who are some of my best friends, and they're Christian, and I love them. They've reintroduced me to God, and you know, I often see that there's a friction, and even in my own life, with finding the fact that some people don't express the same faith as us, and you know, people live a linear life sometimes. They think it's black and white, so it's beautiful the color you've brought to it. But I do want to point this out. I want to see if I have this accurate, Scott. At the core of what you do personally is a service to God. And then I understand that Charity Water is an agnostic entity. It embodies some of that same stuff. But my question is, does the relationship that you have with God, it feels awfully simple and beautiful and just like coaxed around like the golden rule to treat others as you would treat yourself.
Well, let's start, you know, where you started, which was really an outpouring of gratitude. So I do feel very grateful to God for, you know, maybe allowing me to redeem myself. I mean, I was a really, really bad guy.
Is that how you view it? Do you kind of like feel this is repenting for your sins? Do you still feel
no, that? not in penance, because I believe in grace. So the beauty of the way that I was able to come back was one night I just quit drugs and I never smoked again. And I walked away from all of these destructive vices and I was able to start a new life with a clean slate. There was grace that covered over, you know, all of the disgusting kind of sins of a decade. And because the intention of my life changed, you know, I just started opposite direction. I mean, gosh, I wasn't planning on going here, but you know, I used to hate the old churchy words like repent. You know, repent just means to turn away and go in the other direction. So in a way, I just turned away from a destructive, selfish, hedonistic lifestyle and turned towards a lifestyle of helping others. And that was really out of the abundance of gratitude, realizing that I had an opportunity to use my time and my talents and my money in the service of others. And to do that, not out of obligation or debt or shame or penance or making amends, but boy, this was an amazing thing. Like, how come nobody told me how great this was? Does that make sense?
I couldn't make more. It was beautifully said.
Let me say this again in maybe in a more businessy way. I've always hated the language giving back that so many companies use. Huh. Because giving back implies, just in the language, that you've taken so much. You've pillaged and plundered to such extent that, you know, it's time to throw a few scraps back to the poor. Right, throw a few scraps under the table. Let's give a little bit back because you've taken so much. And I just think that the back language is unhelpful. Companies should just talk about their giving programs. Frame giving in the positive, not in the negative. And you know, create a culture of giving in your family, giving in your company. And the more you give, the more you give. Right, I love the idea of people almost becoming addicted to giving, because you know the more you help, the more you want to help. So I don't know. I think often you know, charities and even, you know, a bunch of corporations just kind of frame this as like this thing that we have to do. And then it becomes a burden, or they do it grudgingly rather than this amazing thing we get to do. We get to give because we've been successful. We get to give because we have a little extra time that allows us to volunteer, or some, you know, some extra money in our life.
Absolutely. I wholesomely agree. And on that point, Scott, you almost going back to what you said, you changed your life. You know, for anybody who's listening who doesn't know Scott's story, I would suggest read his book. It's outstanding. Or just listen to any of his conversations or his keynotes online. He'll share it there better than I can. But I understand you went through a really, and you mentioned it here, really hard and one way to frame it is sinful life, but another way is just kind of a destructive life for yourself and others.
Sure.
And you made a great transition. It wasn't a swift one from my understanding in your book, but it was a really beautiful one and one that took effort and time to making your life about service to anybody else. And I would say that one way to frame that is to living with a purpose, you know, and building something with a purpose. So how did you navigate those times for anybody looking to make a similar shift in their lives if they're unhappy, even in a more subtle way? How do you make
it? That's actually why, yeah, I love that. I mean, that's why I wrote the book, because I really wanted to encourage other people who might have made past mistakes like me to kind of say, hey, look, it's never too late. Your past does not have to define your future. And in fact, you can turn those past mistakes. You can turn the, you know, the transgressions or like all the regrets from your past, and they can power you into a completely different future. They can become learnings for the future journey. And, you know, I mean, I jokingly said once, like, unless you've murdered someone, I mean, it was pretty hard to find a worse person than I was during this time. And, you know, my life over the last 15 years has just looked unrecognizable from the guy doing, you know, cocaine, you know, in some disgusting after hours at noon, you know, while everybody else is on their lunch break, you know, to then go home and, I don't know, take a comforter and try and cover the light from the windows and take some Ambien and you know, put myself down before I start and do it all over again. But that's so different. I mean, I'm a father, I'm a husband. I've been to 69 countries now. I've been to Ethiopia 30 times. Charity Water has now funded projects for over 11.4 million people who have clean water. So it's never too late, really. And I think two things really for me, you know, that were important. The first was this heart change. I really did get to a point and said, I want to make a radical 180 degree change. I am so deeply dissatisfied / disgusted with the person that I've become. I really want to look like I want to walk in the opposite direction. Then the second thing that was really important for me was that my community changed. So I found this opportunity to go live in post-war Liberia as a volunteer for a humanitarian medical organization. So I go from people who are hanging out, you know, having sex with anything that moved, basically, doing drugs all the time, you know, flying around the world, chasing the party, to then living on a hospital ship with Christian humanitarian doctors and surgeons who could be in the Maldives, right? Staying at the Four Seasons, could be buying another Lamborghini because their practice is so successful, but instead came to post-war Liberia for a month to operate for free as their vacation. So I was so inspired by, you know, the different lifestyle as well. I think it would have been very hard for me even to have that kind of heart change and then hang out with people doing drugs every night and be, what, I'm going to be the only guy who just stops smoking in that environment, stops doing the drugs, stops drinking. It would have been very difficult. So for me, I needed to also change the profession, the thing that I was doing, and the people that I was surrounding myself with.
Yeah, I love that. I think that point is incredibly valid. And you know, Scott, in the book, you mentioned something incredible, because I remember when you were actually interviewing to be on that ship, you had spent some time in France, if I remember the country correctly, and then they interviewed you to be on the ship and they were kind of iffy. They wanted you to come drive out and meet you. And they were like, are you ready to really devote your life to this? Because we've seen, quote unquote, your type before, and live on a moving hospital for a month, and you have nowhere to go, because at some points they can actually become more of a burden than a helping hand to the ship. And you were ready, but going back to that change in heart, because I think that was more, that might be a harder part for people to grasp. People can go move and they could go anywhere they want if they wanted, but staying there and really committing to it's a different story. That change of heart, I know that there was a part in the book that moved me. There was a gentleman who you got fired and he was a bouncer and he came looking for you and he had a gun and he wouldn't stop and it darted you out of New York City and it was like, I'm changing this. But I actually don't think that that might have been the tipping point, but the change in heart seemed to have come before that. So my curiosity is for people looking to make this shift, how do they, can you accelerate that change in heart in a way, or do you have to wait till things get so dire to change?
You know, I'm very cautious of, you know, speaking outside of personal experience. You know, for me, it was driven by a deep return to faith, which is really like a worldview change. It was a directional change, you know, service to God instead of service to oneself. So I had a much kind of, you know, I had like a meta narrative change that then things were able to fall into. I don't think it needs to be that extreme. But I do think that if you're in a really bad place in your life, you're going to have to change your environment. And, you know, hopefully you have a change of heart. And by the way, it doesn't need to be like a 180. I'm just an extreme person. So kind of everything I do is a little over the top. But, you know, I also believe that I could have made a couple steps in the right direction of service. And then, you know, one step leads to another. So I feel like I was fortunate just to kind of rip off the Band-Aid and go cold turkey. I mean, I remember the night before I had to surrender my passport on this hospital ship at the end of a long gangway. And there was something symbolic or, you know, even prophetic of like walking up, handing my passport, you know, entering a new ship, a new life, a new home, and then sailing away to a continent that I'd never been and leaving my former life kind of on land.
Wow.
You know, leaving it there by the dock. But all that to say, the night before, like an idiot, I smoked 60 cigarettes and I got fantastically drunk in the hotel room alone. And I turned up smelling of booze and cigarettes. You know, so I mean, I was just playing it all the way to the end, but that was it. That was actually it. I mean, I never had a drag from another cigarette. I never looked at a pornographic image again after that. I never gambled again. I never touched coke or any of that stuff. I really did make this clean break. But you know, up until the last minute, I was kind of trying to extract the most, I don't know, hedonism out of the vices.
Wow. So do you to this day, I'm curious, do you have like a balance of, cause that's beautiful. Do you have a balance of, before I ask Scott, let me continue on this thread. How does one, cause a lot of people might view you and say, wow, he has this purpose and this mission and it's so true and real. How does one find their purpose? And I know that you're hesitant to go outside of yourself and offer advice. So I don't know if you have a conversation here or not. And if you don't, then that's okay. But I'm just curious to know if you've been asked that before and if you have, you'd answer.
I think proximity helps. You know, I found my purpose, at least, or I found my mission through proximity. So I didn't go to Africa for a week to paint an orphanage, the sixth color, you know, that had been painted that year with a mission trip from a church, let's just say. And if I sound skeptical towards that, it's because I am. And I just think, you know, so many of these petting the poor experiences of 5 days and 8 days, you know, I've seen these people in airports and they really mean well, you know, but there's 60 people in a neon green t-shirt with some sort of, you know, group on it. And they're going to an orphanage for 5 days. And they're, you know, those pictures are going to be all over their Facebook. And they come back and they haven't impacted anything, nor are they really changed. You know, they're changed. I mean, 5 days, you're changed on such a cursory, superficial level. So I, again, was lucky personally to have this kind of almost 2-year immersion in West Africa, living among doctors and living among the people that we were serving, understanding the healthcare needs, the water needs, the education needs, the political environment and how that was all playing out. And that, like, like I was steeping in it, right? I mean, it was enough time to become, for that to turn into authority. So, you know, there's something to be said, I think, for proximity. Again, if you go and volunteer for 1 hour at your local homeless shelter, I just wouldn't expect your whole life to change. And, you know, I don't know, like if you can find a way to immerse yourself in the new life or the new set of friends, the new environment, or the work that you're hoping to become an expert on, you know, the thing that is not, you know, maybe there's people listening that say, well, I just have a real problem with the environment, you know, and the world's on fire. I have a real problem with sex trafficking. I mean, how is it possible that six-year-olds are being sold for sex? I have a real problem with people going hungry in my town because there's skyscrapers all over my town. And like, we have enough food and we have enough money. Whatever that thing is, like that discontent, the thing that's not okay, you know, it's just not okay on your watch. I would encourage people to lean into it and take more than cursory drive by that issue. You know, for me, that thing turned out to be water, because water impacts health and it impacts education and women and girls and the local economy and food security and all this stuff. So I had my thing that became my life's mission that came out of proximity. And now it's something that I've become a bit of an expert on, with 15 years of experience and traveling and reading white papers and, you know, seeing it with my own eyes and thousands of conversations about water from, you know, subject matter experts around the world. So I think it's that's maybe what I see too few people actually leaning in to anything, maybe.
Yeah, it's beautiful to hear you say that, actually, because, you know, it's almost like it wasn't the answer I was looking for, but it was the answer I really needed. And I think people are going to find that too. It's quote unquote, respectfully, it's the honest answer. It's not this sexy thing, you know, go surround yourself with these people. But I'm curious, Scott, I think that my generation, I'm in kind of on the cusp of Gen Z / millennial, but I think we have the most awareness. I'll say that, the most awareness out of any other generation on like some of the world's major problems and threats. And collectively, I don't say we all, but we all relatively agree on the basic stuff, such as, okay, like climate change is a huge thing. You know, these forest fires, not good. Why do people not have water? Why are there people starving? I mean, the list goes on. And I'm not speaking for everybody on behalf of my generation, but I am saying that I think we have the most awareness out of any generation prior to us. I'm not saying we have the most wit or the most fortitude to go the way and solve it, but if you were to lean in and offer quote unquote mentorship to my generation, to the generation coming up, your kids, what would you say? How do you suggest we go about this, Scott? Are we looking at a world of social entrepreneurs? Are we looking at a world of people taking jobs at companies like yours? Or how is this all going to unfold, in your opinion?
I think hard work is the one thing that I would probably advise someone of your generation. I see people, they just don't work hard enough. You know, there's so much of a leisure, you know, balance in my life, and you know, work-life balance often just looks like streaming Netflix seasons endlessly, or scrolling through your phone, you know, 3 hours a day on Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube. And that time, you know, the Netflix and chill time could be used to become a subject matter expert. It could be used to a pointed learning of something that's in your heart, of something that you want to do. I mean, you know, my wife and I were talking in the beginning days of Charity Water. She was the second employee of Charity Water. We were working 80 to 100 hours every week. We were working 7 days a week, and that was okay. We were trying to create something out of nothing, and it took an unbelievable amount of will and sweat and hard work. Now, 15 years later, with 100 people, you know, roughly working for the organization in New York and distributed in over 1,300 locals or across 20 some countries, I have a very different work life. I'm not working 80 hours a week. I'm doing breakfast and dinner every day with my kids. And there's a whole organization now that can share those burdens. But I see people that, you know, call it a lack of grit or a lack of tenacity or a lack of being willing to make those sacrifices to create something. And then, you know, maybe wondering why they're not more successful or wondering why their thing, you know, isn't getting off the ground like they thought it would be. But, you know, if you ask them how much TV they watched that week or how many video games they played or how much time they spent on social media, you know, it was probably a full work week.
Completely agree, actually. And
by the way, I do realize how old I sound now.
No.
I sound like, I sound like my parents, and hopefully my kids, my kids one day are, you know, we're like, the kids are never getting phones. I mean, that's where we're at right now.
So let me push back on that a little bit in this way. And this is me talking. This is what I tell myself sometimes when I like go home and hang out and do that stuff. Cause you're talking to somebody who does it. And sorry, were you speaking? I you might've got cut off there. I didn't mean to cut you.
No, I'm good.
Okay, great. Sorry. I felt like I heard audio bites and I was like, wait, I don't know if he's done. So apologies. Such as Zoom. But anyways, sometimes I tell myself, and I guess now I'm kind of admitting to myself, it might be an excuse, but I'm curious to know if you tell yourself this, there's a difference between working hard and working smart. I get told that all the time. And I know that you can work smart and still get a lot of really productive work done. So that's worked well for me. Even if it has been an excuse, it's worked well for me. So I'm curious to know,
I think it's both and. I think you need to work hard and you need to work smart.
Gotcha.
Okay. I'm not a believer in a 10 or 20 hour work week to create something. Maybe if, you know, cool. Everybody I know that has been successful, every single person that I have been surrounded with has worked incredibly hard to get there. And they have put in the hours. They would, if there was a theme, it would be hard over smart. You know, maybe both. I think a lot of people were, I mean, you know, look at an Elon Musk. I mean, I'm not advocating 100-hour work weeks or anything, but the guy does work 100 hours a week. And, you know, probably a disaster for any sort of family life, obviously. But, you know, he's probably also working very smart. I mean, I don't think anybody's is going to say that guy is not using his time well.
Yeah, I completely agree. I actually love that answer. It's inspiring. I'm taking notes here actually as we're talking. So to almost like change the tone a little bit from this, I want to dive into a little bit more of your actual work, Scott. So like I said, I have a deep intro. Actually, no, you know what? I keep on doing this, but I do want to ask this. For somebody like myself who's still searching, who's still searching for his thing, so to speak, that I want to devote my life to, and for you it was water. How do you suggest, and there's a lot of people like me, I feel, you know, that just don't quite know what it is we want to devote our life to. I'm not afraid of the hard work. I love it. I'll sink my teeth into it. I have in the past, but it's often been short-lived. I struggle, right? I have this deep interest for this water, for helping people get clean water, much like you. And I also have a deep interest for entertainment and creating content. And there's all these interesting things in my life. And I'm curious to know, do you suggest continuing to experiment? I know that that's largely Tom Bilyeu's conversation around that, but or do you suggest just diving in and still finding a way to work hard through that time? Because I'm almost afraid to say, I have like three things I could devote my life to right now and go in those 80 to 100 hour weeks and really go hard. But I'm almost afraid to, because I'm afraid if I don't know what my life will look like if that's not my thing, you know?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'm sure, you know, many of your listeners are experiencing the same thing. Again, you know, I was really fortunate to have my one thing evolve so clearly out of that immersion, you know, out of that time that I was able to spend in West Africa. I know I'm not suggesting, if you don't know what that thing is, I'm not suggesting you dive all the way in. But at some point, I believe you will. You know, whether you continue experimenting, or you just feel, you know, if you're doing three things and you're giving them all equal time, which of that one thing is drawing you in a little more? Also, what are you having success with? You know, maybe you want to be a dancer, but you know, nobody's really interested in watching you dance, or thinks that you're very good at it. It's something in kind of the church world, you know. It's just because someone thinks that they should be up there singing on a Sunday does not mean that they should be up there singing on a Sunday. So, you know, what do you feel like you're also talented at, and what's resonating? What kind of work is resonating with others, and are you forming any tribe around that? You know, are you getting people to encourage you? Wow, you know, you crushed that speech. You know, oh my gosh, you're a good public speaker. I had no idea. I mean, I was so nervous for the first, you know, 5 years, and I had to pee every time I got on stage. My hands were clammy, but bro, the way you addressed that dinner and welcomed everybody, you should be a speaker. You know, it's that kind of stuff. So, you know, that could lead you maybe in a direction of being a communicator, and taking the love for entertainment and creating content, but maybe doing it to inspire people. So I, you know, again, it's hard to know because everybody has different gifts, but, you know, for me, you know, I was able to kind of my primary gift is as a storyteller. And that's what I did for 10 years, telling the story of why each of these 40 clubs was better than anywhere else you could have gone in New York City that night, whether we had a better DJ or better decor or better drinks or, you know, more celebrities, whatever it was. It was storytelling. Now, you could argue it was storytelling and maybe in the wrong direction, but that's what I've gotten to do now, is just tell myriad stories about people living without access to clean water across 28 countries where we work, but then tell honest, hopeful, and redemptive and inspiring stories of partners out there meeting those needs. You know, a village in Malawi that heard there was a drilling rig that could bring clean drinking water to the whole village, but there was no road. And the village worked for 3 months, and every single household sent one person to create a road. And then the rig was able to access and drill the well, and water came shooting out of the ground, and hundreds of people saw clean water for the first time that they made possible. You know, those are the kind of stories that I get to tell now over and over again from all over the world. So, you know, I happen to just do that in the, you know, under the mission of Charity Water, and then to an end of building a huge, dynamic, diverse global community of people who agree with me that helping human beings get clean, safe drinking water is a really good thing, and we should all be doing this, and, you know, nobody should be drinking dirty water.
Wow. So I love that sentiment. And, you know, I'm curious, I mean, let's go down it, because that really resonated with me. So I'm thinking, I've always said to myself, I really do believe that I could help people if I can just communicate to them. I've always believed that's my gift. Now, my question for you is, have you ever said to yourself, or have you ever encountered anybody, and this is me talking because I've said this to myself, but Nick, you're not allowed to just be a communicator. You need to communicate about something. You need to evolve your life around something and then communicate around that. So communication feels like the medium, but you need to wrap yourself around something different. But I might be overthinking it. So I'm curious, do you feel that way? Because I'm like, you can't just be a communicator. That's what's going through my head.
No, well, I've wrapped, you know, again, I'm communicating all to this meta overarching idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, to solve the water crisis, but really to ask people to consider being more generous, to be more compassionate, to move towards a spirit of care to others. So I actually believe, you know, had our organization been called Charity Education and the mission was building schools around the world, or making sure kids had the school uniforms they needed to get educated, or making sure that, you know, they had tuition money, whatever that was, I think we could be just as successful, and we still could have raised $500 million and built a global community. So it's, you know, the storytelling gift, or the gift of communication, is towards clean water, but it could have been towards something else, environment, or again, sex trafficking, or hunger, or justice issues, or whatever that is.
Gotcha. It just so happened to be that.
And I feel lucky to have found my thing and then stuck with it.
Yes. How did you know it was your thing? I'm curious.
Well, again, it was the lens of doctors and health. So when my environment changed, I was on a hospital ship with people in the medical profession. So the big realization for me was learning that 50% of the people living in Liberia didn't have clean water to drink, and then learning that 50% of the disease. So half of the sick people in the country were sick because they were drinking that dirty water and had no access to sanitation or toilets. So for me, it was really still through the lens of health. And I think one of the medical officers said, hey, Scott, you know, you could play doctor to millions and millions of people if you just gave them the most basic need for health.
Wow.
So that's how I discovered water, was through that lens. And, you know, even this goes back to my childhood. I wanted to be a doctor when I grew up because my mom was sick and I wanted to help her and people like her. So this was a little bit of a departure to some of those themes or interests.
That's beautiful. So, and that actually, that touched my heart. So thank you. And by the way, I wanted to ask you, Scott, why wells? So being a student of water, not even close to what you've done, you're a renowned expert. So I'm curious, why wells? I thought for a long time that desalination might be the way of the future and creating piping from the kind of...
Yeah.
Yosha,
we fund 13 different technologies. So wells is kind of 1/13th of the arsenal, the deployable water, you know, project arsenal that we attack the problem with. So, you know, a well in Ethiopia or Malawi is a great solution for a community that has clean drinking water in an aquifer underneath them. It costs about $12,000 to serve a few hundred people with clean water. And, you know, we're focused on the sustainability of these projects, and there's a whole nother podcast on that.
Yeah.
We also fund $65 bio sand filters in Cambodia, and we fund the largest bio sand filter program in the world. We also fund $1 million gravity fed systems with networks of pipes and reservoirs and holding tanks and, you know, a pump that would cost $100,000 just to be able to move water up and down mountains in Rwanda. So it's a really diverse portfolio. There's no silver bullet to solving the water crisis. There's no one size fits all solution. A lot of different things work in different contexts. Desalinization has actually been too expensive still. The costs have been coming down, but it is still a rich country solution, or, you know, maybe a middle income to rich country solution. It's not a solution for people making $1 a day or $2 a day. You've got membranes, you have energy. It's still a very energy intensive process. Mm-hmm. So I'm hopeful for that in the future. But, you know, if you look at the countries that are using desalinization, it's Israel, it's, you know, some of it's Dubai, the Emirates,
California,
Jordan,
US,
parts of California. So, you know, the other thing is you obviously need a coast, or you need salty water. So, you know, country like Ethiopia, it's landlocked. You know, Kenya, I mean, there's no coast in so many of the countries. You know, you look at central India, where some of the water scarcity is the biggest issue. You know, they're nowhere near a source of water to desalinate. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's coming down. It's a really interesting field. The Economist published a pretty interesting state of water and you know, we're just saying, hey, look, Moore's Law is happening a little bit to desalinization, but it's still not a viable option yet. And you know, these plants also, I mean, can cost tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Just for the initial infrastructure.
Yeah. And then, there's a ton of issues with it still. Like, I know that they have all this really crazy, I think it's called brine or saline or something like that they dump back out, and it's just this salt concentrated water.
Yeah, it's a really wasteful process. I think it's 2 for 1.
Yeah.
You know, you get 2 gallons of water, but you get this disgusting salt that then can kill marine life when it's deposited back into the ocean in concentrate.
It really screws it. Israel's been interesting for me because I know they faced days, I think it's called day zero, but they faced day zero where they were going to run out of clean water. Some other countries, I think that Brazil faced this as well, but Israel, there's been some of the most unique innovation. Have you heard of WaterGen? Do companies like this interest you? I'm sure you've heard of WaterGen.
Not WaterGen. I've heard of SkyWater a lot.
Same thing. And by the way, for anybody listening, it's just these companies that create these machines that pull hydrate, they pull moisture from air, and then they create clean water. Are these solutions for you at all or no?
They're not. Again, they're just not. They're not doing the volume of water that we would need. So, you know, a well can pump about 1 million liters every year. I mean, it's an amazing amount of water that you can pull out of the ground. And by the way, this is what, you know, people in, you know, maybe not far from you, you know, outside of Toronto might just have their house hooked up to a well.
Yeah.
I grew up in New Jersey and we had a well and we used a huge amount of water. I mean, everybody in the house could take 15, 20 minute showers, you know, your dishwasher's running. And this is just coming from a hole in the ground. So yeah, the new technologies, and again, we have a whole team of 20 people who are dedicated. They live, eat, breathe, sleep the delivery of clean water solutions in the most cost-effective, sustainable way possible around the world. So they are looking at these things, and you know, we're not seeing them yet. You know, something like the Life Straw. You know, if you really think through the Life Straw, it works about a year. So imagine handing out 1 million Life Straws for $20 each. And then a year later saying, hey, can we please have those 1 million pieces of plastic back? Here's another $20 million worth of Life Straw. Okay, year three. Okay, we need those 1 million pieces of plastic back. Here's year three's filter. And then you still, that's not even solving the problem if someone is walking 6 or 7 or 8 hours to a faraway swamp. That's just cleaning the water. That's not moving the water. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a whole nother, probably a whole nother podcast. Or I'd have you talk to different members of the team.
Yeah, well, I'm happy that I asked, actually. It gave me like an accelerated Google search because I'm sure I could have found that stuff online, but I appreciate that. I appreciate you walking me through that because I do care about it. I'm thinking about doing something with canned water because I feel like a celebrity endorsed canned water. I have access to some neat people. Might get some plastic out of the oceans, but again, I'm just I'm spoofing here. But I know you have a hard out at noon, so we have about 5 minutes till then. I want to ask you some more overarching questions. And here's one. In a word, Scott, what would you say life's about for Scott? Here, so what's life about for Scott? What would you say in a word?
Service.
I thought you might say that. What's the second thing that you say my life's about?
Probably faith and family.
I love that.
Giving.
I love those. I love those words. What do you think the world needs more of right now with everything that's going on?
Gosh, civility, compassion, empathy, people giving each other the benefit of the doubt.
How do you think we might go about that?
Turn off the television. Stop watching cable news.
Yeah.
Whatever your cable news poison, turn that off.
I like that. Do you have any times in your life that truly tested your mettle? And I know that you do. It's a big question. But what did you learn, more importantly, about yourself in dealing or maybe even not dealing with them?
Yeah, I mean, and I write about this in Thirst. I mean, there are so many, almost running out of money at the organization or going bankrupt, being sued. I think the way I've always looked at that is just asking the question, you know, am I staying true to my values? Am I at risk of compromising my integrity at all in this situation? Or maybe said another way, well, let me make sure that throughout these trials, I never compromise my integrity, because it'd be a lot better to go bankrupt and be able to sleep at night and knowing that, you know, you're completely honest. So I don't know. I think this, you know, and I pray a lot. I mean, you know, I have a faith that there's a God that answers prayers, and I've seen unbelievably difficult to explain, you know, miraculous answers to prayer over the years. And, you know, and again, for someone with a different worldview, those are coincidences, or somebody would say karma or whatever. But I mean, you know, for me, it's like miracle. I mean, there was a less than a, you know, 1 in a million chance that something like this would happen, and then it did. It was plenty of the direct answer to prayer.
Yeah,
I really have seen many of those.
Yeah, it was beautiful. And in our last minute here, because I want to let you go right before noon, I'm going to ask you some rapid fire, and then I'll let you go. What music are you listening to right now?
Oh, I'm listening to a lot of classical by Ravel, R-A-V-E-L. Cool. It's like pour les enfants. It's a beautiful kind of lullaby. That's helping me put my kids to sleep these days.
I love that. It sounds beautiful. Some of your favorite movies? I love movies, so I'd love to watch a movie.
Oh, anything by Terrence Malick. Tree of Life is amazing. Here, I actually have a little favorite movies list that I'm going to pull up for 1 second.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Because I just did this the other day with some friends. And okay, here's Peter Weir's The Way Back, mm-hmm. Thin Red Line, Lion, Tree of Life, In a Better World is an obscure movie that I absolutely love. I like Hell or High Water, 99 Homes. My favorite romantic comedy is About Time, which I think is fantastic. One of my favorite documentaries is Salt of the Earth, Sebastio Salgado's film. I like some old Wim Wenders, German stuff. Wings of Desire is great. Those are a few.
I'll definitely watch some of those. I love that. How about a couple favorite books?
You know, I like a lot of stuff by C.S. Lewis. I'm reading the Narnia stuff again now with kids. I read some business stuff from time to time about culture, or I'm trying to think what's, you know, I've been doing more audio lately than...
I love that you narrated your own book.
Oh my gosh. I don't know how you couldn't. Yeah. I've been doing some reading on racial justice issues. It's been really interesting. Let's see, in my Audible, Little House on the Prairie. Okay. It's a mix. I have a daughter.
That's fair. Last question is, what's a habit that you don't, or a bad habit that you don't intend on breaking? I like asking people.
Oh, I bite my fingernails for years.
Oh, that was an easy one.
It's super embarrassing. Yeah. My wife thinks I look like a chipmunk. And when I get stressed out, I just like chew on my fingers. But I started doing it when I was 4 or 5, and it just feels like 45 years in, it's going to be a tough habit to break.
Dude, I get that. Hey, listen, if you can solve the world's water crisis, I think you can figure that out. Anyways, I know that you have a hard out, but my very last
thanks option, so much.
What are three words that you would like to describe yourself by?
Oh, kind, generous, giver.
You're definitely living those out. Scott, I'm not going to keep you long. I cannot thank you enough for doing this show. This has been one of the greatest privileges from all the guests I've had on. You've been somebody I've been looking to have on for so long, and I'm not going to rant, but God bless you, man. Your beautiful soul and what you're doing has touched my life in so many ways. It's hard to describe. I'm going to send you that case of beer. I'll get your PL.
Oh, that's great.
From your assistance, and I look forward to it, man. God bless you, Vic, and the family, and I'll talk to you soon, I hope.
Hey, thanks so much. Really, really, really appreciate it.
Thanks, Scott. Adios.
See ya. Thanks for having me on.
Bye. Have a great day.